To make sense of how your 2021 local government elections vote can transform your city,
stay on 702 and Cape Talk.
14 minutes after 10 o'clock, and Stanley Beckett, author and consultant at Change Creator, joins me now. Stanley, good evening to you, and thank you very much for joining us, my brother. Are you good?
Yeah, good evening over to you and all the listeners. All good, thank you.
Yeah, tell me what you have for us tonight, man. I'm so thoroughly excited.
Yeah, me too. And I'm really happy to invite back, because we had such a great response when she joined us last time. Someone is very special and dear to me. Like I said last time, we had the pleasure of having some royalty on air with us tonight through Queen. And just to set it up again, and as I'm introducing her, Aubrey, she and why she's so special to me is because when I started down this journey and this path that's led me to where I am today, about 15 years ago, Queen was a very big part of the team that mentored me, coached me, and also supported me as I started this journey. And all through the years, always, Queen has just been such a strong support and such a strong believer in what she's doing, and just been doing such wonderful work that it's a pleasure to have her on our show tonight, and specifically because she's recently released a book, which I think should be in every single leader's hand in this country and worldwide, and it's called Leadership Based in Consciousness, Anchored in Consciousness is a Big Deal. And if you remember, when she was on last time, we started speaking about some of the principles. And tonight, she's sharing with us something really important, especially with the local elections coming up very soon. How does this apply to leadership in the public space? And I'm sure that we can all agree that there's a lot lacking in many instances in that space. And hopefully tonight we're going to get some more insight to it. As you know, this features Change Your Thinking. And tonight I know she will change and powerfully change our thinking about some of these concepts again. So yeah, it's just my honor, and thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to bring Queen onto the show and to introduce her to our listeners. I know we're all going to be glued listening to what she's going to share with us.
I certainly was in the last conversation we had with Ooze Queen. Stanley, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to speak to Queen Ramotsehwa now. And thank you very much once again for organizing this great speaker and thought leader. Ooze Queen, thank you so much for joining us. And I really appreciate your time and for agreeing to join us once again. Queen Ramotsehwa is executive coach at Teto Leadership Coaching Academy. And as you heard Stanley speaking about her latest book, Leadership Anchored in, Ooze Queen?
In Consciousness.
In Consciousness. So good to have you, Ooze Queen. Really, really good to have you. Are you well?
I'm good. Good evening to you, and good evening to the listeners.
Well, let's set the scene. We are just under 3 weeks before the local government elections. The conversation in the country has been about leadership during this time, who we want to get to lead us. But what should we be looking for as citizens of this country, particularly as we start thinking about whom we want to lead us, based on some of the thoughts that you've penned in your book, Ooze Queen?
I think I keep saying this, that leadership is one word that is loosely used. And in the process, we really miss the impetus that comes with the role of a leader. I don't think we appreciate the depth of the meaning of leader. Because when you say leader, one, there's somebody in good standing who is leading a person who trusts them and chooses to follow them to a desired destination for mutual benefit. And that definition is talking to especially the public space. Because when you look at what we who we refer to when we talk about leaders in the public space. We're talking about people who are responsible for creating an environment that celebrates people's dignity, that supports people to be successful, that ensures that people receive basic rights or achieve basic rights, you know?
Yeah.
So a leader is somebody who gets the significance of the role of being a leader. And I want to share, and this is an article, it's a subsection in the book from page 36, and the subtitle is, a leader is somebody who creates an environment in their lives that will never allow them to lie to themselves and those they lead. See, when you're a leader, we depart from the premise that you are honest, authentic, trustworthy. Because if it is about leading, it means you carve the path, and somebody looks at that path and trusts that it is for their good, and they choose to follow you. So there's an issue of trust. You have to trust yourself first, and then the people that you lead must also trust you.
Yeah.
So when we listen to the manifestos, we listen to what the leaders, and I'm saying leaders in inverted commas, are saying to the people and promising them, are these promises authentic, real promises, or are people saying these knowing fully well that they are not speaking the truth?
You speak of the faculty of trust in the relationship between leaders and the led. And you started off by saying that, you know, you got to know yourself in order for you to be able to identify those attributes in the leader that are congruent or aligned to the values that you espouse. And my concern is precisely that, Ozqueen, that we've sort of given our power away in the seeking out of leaders, and that's why we don't have leaders, but charlatans. So my question to you is, to what extent then are we responsible as the citizenry, as the electorate, if you want, for the production of these charlatans who go by the name of leaders, but actually aren't, because they absolutely are miles, light years away from some of the issues that you describe?
So Aubrey, this is such a complex question. Because when you look at the social and political character of our country, it has been shaped by so many things that have got nothing to do with leadership. The need for people to identify themselves, because the identity is what kept them going. The identity enabled us to believe that we are working for the same cause. You know, unfortunately, one of the issues about us in South Africa is color became what defines us. For the longest time, issues were around black, white, colored, Indian.
Yeah.
And because as a people, we have not dealt with that identity.
Yeah.
We are now sitting with a situation where something that shaped our past is continuing to shape our future. And because we don't have a clear common identity, because we don't have a clear common identity, we are unable to secure a common future that we all yearn so much for.
Yes.
Because all South Africans want water, clean water. All South Africans want light, consistent and reliable. All South Africans want reliable health system, education system, roads that work. We all want the same thing. We still trapped in our past that separated us so badly that at the moment, when we talk about elections, we immediately go back into the separated identity. So when you listen to all the political parties, for instance, they promise us the same thing, all of them. They just use different words and rhetoric and slogans. But they're all promising us what they know we want, what we also know we want. And it is so crazy that I sit here and say, I honestly don't know who to vote for.
Because
the common effect that they are promising, all of us would know who to vote for.
Yeah.
But we still don't know.
And that is because, I suppose, intuitively we know that what is presented as a manifesto is not necessarily what that political party is about. It is probably about the issues that you've raised prior. It's still about those identity issues, still underlying those manifestos, I imagine.
The thing is, we listen to our leaders tell us the things that they are going to do for us. And as they say them, we know that they are not going to be able to do them.
Yeah.
Some of the things that they promise are just impossible. From a business sense, from a cost sense, they're just impossible. Yet, because we are so gullible, because we are still so trapped in our identity shaped by our history, and we have yet to design an identity that is shaped by our future, we still vote for this as we go and vote on the 1st of November.
Yeah.
99% of the people, maybe I'm exaggerating, but a good percentage will be voting for a better the devil you know.
Yes.
How do you vote for the devil?
Oh, I get that a lot. I get that a lot on this show where people will reason like that. And I said, but have you tried perhaps an angel? You know, well, why do we keep talking about the devil we know? But isn't that, Osqueen, as amusing perhaps as it might be in this particular conversation, isn't that what we've become, or is that not the selection we have? I mean, based on what you've said, that's all we've got, devils, and we need to choose the better of the devils.
Yeah.
My question becomes, how do we create angels? And how do we make those angels a part of the democratic conversation for real leadership in this country? Because, yes, I mean, when I have a conversation about the elections, my first question to the people that I'm talking to is, so tell me, what do you promise? I know that what they're promising is nonsense. I know.
Yeah.
And I think that the listeners also know that. But I suppose somebody would argue and say, then why do you ask the question? You are complicit in this dance, in this futile dance of what we call the democratic process. When you know that a candidate such and such says, oh, I'm going to give you houses, I'm going to give you roads, I'm going to give you water, I'm going to give you trains with the people inside. We know that it's a whole lot of nonsense. Why do we participate? Why do we authenticate? Why do we validate the process by being a part of it?
I hear that question, and it's such a powerfully valid question. And a question like that, you ask people who have a choice. by the time somebody settles for voting for a devil, there's no choice. And my question then goes straight back to the leader to say, and this is a question that I want to pose and a challenge that I want to pose to every single person listening to me who is actively participating in who the party is choosing. That where is your conscience when you are part of a system that you know is leaving people destitute? Where you know that the people that you're choosing don't care about the South Africans who are now out there risking COVID and all to make people look good and make people look like leaders. What is it in these people that makes it okay to lie to people? And are you honestly believing the lie that you're telling us that we know is a lie? Or are you consciously lying to us? And then we need to find another label, and I think you're using that label there. Then in South Africa, we mustn't talk about leadership. We must talk about opportunists, that it's the survival of the fittest. It's the winner takes it all. And then it must be what the voting is about. It's about the smartest guy wiggles his way through to the top and gets the opportunity to then take care of his business or her business and at the expense of the citizens of this country. Yeah. So I know that we have a responsibility as voters. And my challenge is anybody who's raising their hand and posturing as leader, what is it in that person that makes lying to themselves and lying to people who trust them? What is it that makes it okay? One of the subtitles in the book talks about, if you can disappoint me without disappointing yourself, then there is no connection. So don't call us your people. Don't call us fellow South Africans. Don't use any label that assumes that we are connected, that we are one. Don't use that. Blatantly come and say what you want to say and get what you want to get, so that upfront we know that we are on our own.
Osquin, you raise a very important question, and let me perhaps pose this question to our listeners. What are the questions that we as the electorate are not asking? Give me a call. I'd like to hear from you. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Listen to my question. What are the questions that we are not asking that keep the so-called leaders insulated from accountability? Yeah? Because I think, Osquin, you're correct that we have this insulated relationship between these so-called leaders because they are not connected to us. But I argue very strongly that we, the electorate, are responsible for the continued insulation, and that's why it's so hard to keep them accountable. It's so hard to keep them accountable because we play the game, we play along, we know that they're lying, we know that they're not going to achieve the things that they've not achieved, but yeah, we don't have a choice, I suppose, ultimately, and that's why we want the better the devil we know than the one that we don't know. Mm. Secondly, here's the question that I want to ask you. Some may argue, indeed, many so-called leaders and many people who are listening to this conversation will say, yeah, you know, your conversation with Queen is great. It's a beautiful, pious, sanctimonious conversation.
Mm. Mm.
But it has nothing to do with the realities on the so-called ground, because all of these values, these wonderful, highfalutin, lofty ideas that you speak about don't pay the bills. Right? And we are dealing here with the reality of life. And you guys are here talking about values, value systems, ethical behavior, honesty. That stuff doesn't pay the bills. Sure, it's great. And it's probably nice for you and Queen to talk about those things, Aubrey, because it helps your ratings. And it helps as an escapism for those that wish for or desire a world that is ruled by these values you guys speak about. But the reality is that that stuff died a long time ago, Aubrey and Queen. Wake up! How do you respond to somebody like that? So I suppose what I'm asking you, Os Queen, is what is the value? What is the real value of the virtuous value system that you are speaking about that should allow us to identify certain people who call themselves leaders or the genuine leaders?
See, I'm going to say this, that that value is stewardship. It's appreciating that a leader is the custodian of the wealth and well-being of others. That's what a leader is. A leader is somebody who has the capacity to look after something on behalf of another. And with honesty, trustworthiness, integrity, use what they have in their care for the benefit of them. For instance, when you look at the parent, a parent is the steward for the well-being of a child.
Yeah.
You know when the child needs to go to the doctor, you take the child to the doctor.
Yeah.
When a child needs to go to school, you take them to school. When they need warm clothing, it's winter. That's stewardship. And a leader who is not the steward, who is not in that position because they are driven by the responsibility to make sure that what they have in their care is for the use of others. I have a philosophy in life that when you have a lot of, like if you look at families generally, you find one or two people who are really well off, and the rest either are just making it or are struggling. Every family has got somebody like that. And my philosophy, my personal philosophy, and those who know me will attest to this. My philosophy is that person who's got more than the rest in their clan is the custodian of the wealth of that clan.
Mm.
And you are then equipped with the qualities, the judgment, the ability to discern, the ability to love, which means want the best for everybody, and show up so that the best happens. The person with the most wealth in a clan normally is the custodian, make sure that all the kids go to school. We call it black tax today because we continue to drift further and further away from values that make sense. So I'm okay with my stuff. I can live an opulent, extravagant life when my blood is sleeping without food. There's something there that has twisted this thing and removed stewardship
connect,
out of our everyday life.
Connect for me, Os Queen. I hear you because I suppose I'm on your side here. But I really would like to play devil's advocate. for the better devils we know. Connect for me these wonderful values of integrity, of honesty, of general goodness to benefit. Because I think that the conversation that we don't have as South Africans is the honest conversation that says, yeah, sure, you know, I mean, you know, you guys speak a good talk, and it's nice, no problem. I'd like more of my children to hear you people. But when we're having the real talk, when on the other side of the room, The real talk is about benefit. It's about being able to overcome the rigors of poverty and the humiliation and the humiliation of poverty and all of those realities. So it's great, guys. Continue, and you know what? I'll sponsor you guys one day. But when I want to have real talk, the fact of the matter is that I need to do what I need to do to get what I want to get to further my situation, because the reality of the world that we live in is not this custodian talk that you guys are talking about. It's a dog-eat-dog world. Connect for me, Oz Queen, the benefit of the high morals, the high falutin values. Connect that for me. Help me understand that.
So the thing is, we have a choice. We have a choice which poverty we want. The poverty of morals and values is dilapidating. It killed generations of the citizens of this country. And to come back from that, not even hard work is enough. Because we see people who work hard who are living in squalor because of the poverty of morality and values. Because in the end, I look at myself as a business owner. My business is many years old.
Yeah.
And I chose to live according to the values of stewardship and integrity. And Aubrey, I can tell you that my business is not where it should be if we were to talk financial growth and profile. And it's a conscious choice that I have made. I will not pay a farthing bribe to anybody. I'm richer for it. Because maybe my business doesn't afford me a flashy lifestyle, doesn't afford me the amount of money that I know I have the capacity to make.
Yeah.
What it affords my children is a powerful legacy that they can remain... they can stay proud for who they are instead of hiding, because I lied to them and made them believe that there's a shortcut to success. And that shortcut is so short-lived that when it hits the end of the road, they lose everything. Everything. they lose their name. They lose their heritage. They have to hide. That is worse than the poverty where values can teach people to still catch a fish and know how to catch a fish. So we have a choice. We have a choice to look for quick fixes. But when we choose quick fixes, we must appreciate that it's a matter of time before we hit below rock bottom, where it is going to take many generations to come back.
Listen,
unlike if we chose the moral high ground, because then with the moral high ground, we can put systems in place and work steadily and eradicate poverty.
Oskwit, I want to take some calls. Lots of calls coming through. My guest is Queen Ramotse Hwa. She is executive coach at Tsetlo Leadership and Coaching Academy. And she is the author of a book called Leadership Anchored in Consciousness. And I'm interested to hear from you as you listen to this conversation. What are the benefits, really, of the higher values? Because I think that's the fundamental question that certain people ask themselves, and in their greed, in their need to run away from poverty, in their need to get away from, I suppose, the humiliation of lack, then make the decision that the luxury of high values, integrity, honesty, all of those things is a luxury best enjoyed by those that are well healed. I'm interested to hear your thoughts about this. What is the benefit, the real practical benefit of these high values. Honesty, integrity, yeah, high morality. Give me a call. I'd like to hear from you. Because ultimately, folks, it appears to me that these ideals are now understood as optional, because there is an argument for both sides. That's why you hear leaders speak about, yeah, but what I did is not illegal, and not have the conversation about it's not ethical. What is the direct benefit of ethical conscious leadership? I want to go back to that conversation, Queen, about conscious leadership, but let me take these calls. I hope you've got a pen so that you can get the gist of all of them, and then maybe respond to them. Paul is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Paul.
Hi, bro. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Paul, go ahead, my brother.
I'm good. Good evening, Queen. And, you know, I think the conversation, you know, sparks a lot of things around leadership. But yeah. I think around your first statement around what don't we ask ourselves as voters when we choose these leaders and put them in a position of power or believe in their, you know, manifesto. One thing is that we don't look at, you know, the school of leadership they come from, you know. What perspective, you know, what philosophy they were taught in, and do they have the proper role models themselves, and how they were groomed? And I think one thing that we've learned about leadership, I mean, look at corporate leadership, is that there are consequences for every action you do, and there are also barometers which are put in place to say that if you do not achieve 1, 2, 3, and 4, then you won't be able to get your bonus, for argument's sake.
Yeah.
So I think our leaders are given that latitude to say that if you achieve or if you deliver, you know, I'll be angry, you know. I'll just bend tires and picket outside a government.
There's no consequence management, as they call it, yeah?
Yeah, there's no consequence management. And most of the time, you know, they'll make statements, as you alluded to earlier on, that it's not legal, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and
or it's not illegal.
And that becomes the crux of our leaders. And I think... Sorry, probably.
Sorry, man. I was going to move on, but you weren't finished. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think also the benefit of a higher moral... you know, for leaders, is that one thing, you know, consciously they'll be aware that if I do not deliver water to someone, if I don't deliver sanitation to someone, if I don't deliver education to someone, what are the ripple effects in the community? What is the growth projection of leaders that might come and be my successor in the same role as I am? You know, what is the quality that will emerge from the area that I represent as a councillor or as a mayor, as a premier, you know, from the people who elected me, or from the offspring of the people that elected me.
Yeah.
I think if you have that moral, that high moral value, then you'll be able to relate yourself and actually empathize with whoever it is that is trying to say, we believe in you to lead us, but then don't forget that you need to elevate us to the next level in terms of our wellness.
Paul, I hear you. Thank you very much for your call. Much appreciated. Ellen is in Pretoria. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah, go ahead.
The issue of law and moral.
Yeah, or ethics, yeah?
Leadership, there should be a balance of that. You know, because I think us as citizens, we've painted ourselves into a corner by agreeing to an electoral system, you know, that gives so much power to the politicians to have the absolute power to make decisions, you know, on who can be the president, who can be the, and without us putting in place checks and balances on how the leadership or the track record of these people must be checked. We're sitting in a situation where we actually don't have control. Once that constituency has decided to appoint a mayor or an MEC, we don't have control of the profile of that person and what is it that that person can do, because whatever that person is going to be found on the wrong side, we are just... subjected to those structures that elected him. And we citizens don't have the power. The only time we have the power is after 5 years when we vote.
Yeah.
We simply don't have that much of leverage to control anything in the immediate.
Is that a reality or is it a perception, Ellen? And let me tell you why I'm asking that question. When you see the work that is done by civil society organizations in between elections, right? How they can lobby and pressurize politicians to make certain policies that become laws. I almost want to beg to differ to say that we are not as helpless as we are not engaging.
Yes.
So in other words, I'm saying that our helplessness doesn't come from our lack of agency, but rather from the lack of the use of that agency.
Yeah.
So I suppose what I'm asking you is, sure, I agree with you that the only way that we participate in the elective process, election process, is every 5 years.
Yeah.
But for us to participate in the socio-economic process, it does not need for us to wait for 5 years. We can lobby. We can do different things. We can lobby even for the changing of that electoral system. But we don't. And that is why I asked the question to O'Screen to say, but at some level, are we not complicit in the creation of the leaders that we have? And therefore, you know, we should be thankful for the leadership we have because we've created it.
Yeah, but remember when you raise that issue of the politics of the stomach, the immediate personal need of a person versus what they have to fight against. You should see what those people of Abahlali Bamjondolo, what they go through.
Yeah.
They are a lobbying body, but what they go through, it takes so much to fight such an electoral system.
Ellen, I'm going to stop you there, my sister. Let me stop you there. Thank you very much. Dave is in Cape Town. How are you doing, brother?
Hi, Opie.
Yeah, man. How's it going?
It's good. Good to hear you again, man.
Yeah, go for it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I want to connect your conversation tonight about how we choose leaders to your conversation last night, actually, about why we choose bad boys and bad girls. It's exactly the same thing, man.
Yeah.
You know, like these bad guys or women know what we want. They know how to look good for us. You know, they got to have the right accent, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, which alliance I'm voting for, Shorlina, from Cape Town.
Yeah.
But, like, are these things really what matters? Or is it actually integrity and morality and a sense of, I'm actually going to do what I say,
but nobody's answered this question, and I'm hoping that O'Screen will answer the question for us as we give her the podium and close. You see, when I'm not honest, when I steal, when I'm when I don't have integrity, when I don't behave ethically, I see the direct benefit of that. I immediately have 2 million rands in my bank account, I'm driving a flashy car. There's a direct correlation with my not so lofty value system.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am not seeing, and this is a real devil's advocate question, I'm not seeing the connection between the highfalutin, high morals, high ethics. I'm not seeing the connectivity, the connection between that and the eradication of my poverty.
Right. So it comes to the question of objectivity. When you zoom out and look at yourself objectively, even as a voter, you know, us as voters, if we are choosing people like this who can so easily fleece us with their cars and their fake empty rhetoric, then it kind of like it's shame on us. In the same way that some boy or girl who always falls for a bad guy or bad girl has some issues, you know, and everybody around them looking objectively at that situation says, like, this girl has a bad choice or there's something wrong with her choice in men you know. So likewise, if we think about that as a country, or like when my municipality is breaking down, I must be able to say there's something that's got to do with me and my choices.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
So, like, this is, I think, how we make ourselves.
I hear you, man. I hear you. My brother, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go because I want to hear what Oz Queen says as she closes for us. Oz Queen, I don't know if I've been making sense, but connect for me why it is that we should be good when being bad is paying off. why? Because all that it is just another nice to have conversation, but it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't pay the bills. Can you show me how ethical leadership pays the bills? And you'll know. That's why nowadays every youngster wants to be a politician. You hear how they speak. They want to emulate these guys. You speak to somebody that has been using the word country for the last 20 years and they suddenly change and they talk about country. Oh, Baba. All this time, how have you been? You understand what I'm trying to say? And I've got a feeling that it's connected to the need to see direct benefit rather than to be associated with these ideas. Let me read you what Lebogang in Midrand says. He says, "Hi, Aubrey. Those values bring peace, inner peace within yourself, peace between you and people around you. Hopefully, world peace," says Lebogang Midrand. And I can tell you, the person listening to us is laughing. You can keep your peace, bro. Give me the milk.
So, Aubrey, you know what? Your question is such a big question. What is the benefit? And as a people, until we define success, until we have a common definition of success, we can't start talking about benefit. Because different people define success differently. And that is why we get to where we say stealing pays. How can you even put those two words in one sentence? That is because we do not have a common understanding of what success means. And I'm almost finding myself closing the same way that I closed in the last time to say, if you look at the coat of arms, if you want to know who a South African in good standing looks, who is he? He has the qualities as represented in the coat of arms. But as a country, we become lazy. We don't teach ourselves. We don't educate ourselves. We don't educate each other. As a result, we have different definitions of success. Mm. When a person who is a leader is driving a flashy car and has 2 million rand in the bank, and your constituency is living in an area where sewage flows into their house. Mm. And when you're interviewed about an urgent, because for me that's urgency. If I was in that situation, it would be dire. And you hear somebody who is a leader say, "We are still investigating."
Are we ready as a common definition of
dignity.
Are we ready as a society for leaders?
No.
Why?
Because we are lazy to do the work, Aubrey. We are lazy to do. When we want to say hunger is urgent enough for us to steal, with everything that we allow, because we allow in the name of poverty, we're taking 100 steps backwards. And that's because we are lazy to draw the line and do what it takes to take the first step forward. We keep allowing, taking steps backwards, because it's the easiest thing to do, to think. We are the most backward-looking people because we are lazy to do what it takes for a better future.
Oz Queen, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you there. Promise me you're going to come back again.
You tell me when.
Queen Ramotsehwa, Executive Coach at Tseto Leadership and Coaching Academy. How do we follow you? How do we find your book, Oz Queen?
You find the book by ordering from the email address office@tseto.co.za. And you find us on Facebook, Tete Leadership and Coaching Academy, Instagram, Tete.academy, Twitter, Tete Academy, and YouTube channel. That's where you get more on our different products, Tete Leadership and Coaching Academy.
Queen Ramotsehwa, the author of the book Leadership Anchored in Consciousness, please find it. Os Queen, once again, thank you very much. It's always an honor speaking to you. Much appreciated.